And we are back into the book of Matthew this week. And we're looking at chapter 8, verses 1 to 17. So if you'd like to have that open, that's where we'll spend the vast majority of our time. We might flick to Leviticus briefly. So if you want to maybe just have your fingers on that ready to go, but we'll be in Matthew 8 for most of the time. And we're looking at Jesus as he deals with healing. Or are we? Because Jesus certainly heals in these passages. Are we looking at just the healing ministry of Jesus, or are we looking at something more than just once-off healing to these people from Jesus? That is certainly not to downplay these miracles. It is not to say that they are not wonderful and important. But it is to say that everything in Jesus' ministry was done to point towards something. These healing moments aren't Jesus being self-indulgent. He isn't healing just for kicks. And he isn't healing just so people can look at him and say, "Boy, howdy, how good is this guy?" This is done to point towards something. Jesus' ministry existed to point towards the kingdom of heaven. Every moment of his ministry was perfectly executed so that onlookers would be astounded and ask, "Who is this man? How could he do this?" Not so that he could say, "How good am I?" or anything like that, but so he could point to the Father. So we start with verse 1, and I just want to quickly look at one verse individually, and then we'll start to look at it a bit bigger. But it says, "When Jesus came down from the mountainside, large crowds followed him." And this is an important thing to know as we get into this, because the mountainside was where Jesus just finished the Sermon on the Mount. So everything that we learnt this year in our Matthew series, chapters 5 to 7, people would have had this in mind as they follow. Large crowds followed him. And I think it's important because Jesus has just taught, and now people are following him to back up his teaching with action. Jesus taught like no one else, and people were curious. If this guy is telling the truth, what does that mean for them all? What are they to do with that? So people are following him because they were interested in what he had to say in those chapters 5 to 7. To those that didn't like what he was talking about, they probably left. I imagine during the Sermon on the Mount, in those two chapters, there were some things that might have really rubbed people up the wrong way, and I reckon people might have just got up from where they were sitting during that message and walked off because they were challenged. But Jesus didn't back down from the truth that he had to teach and convey. And now, after teaching that truth, those who are interested have followed. And I think this is important for us to wrestle with, because Jesus isn't just walking into these situations randomly. He has prepared and almost created this situation. We see him finishing a sermon, and what does he do? He begins to put that teaching into action to show people his authority. "Hey, I've just taught you this. I've just told you this. I've said believe this. And now I'm going to do something so you can believe why I said it. I am the authority that you can trust." He's got them curious. He said, "Come and see." And now they are coming to see what they'll find. And first we see a leper. "Suddenly a man filled with leprosy approached him and knelt before him. 'Lord,' the man said, 'if you are willing, you can heal me and make me clean.' Jesus reached out and touched him. 'I'm willing,' he said, 'be healed.' And instantly the leprosy disappeared. Then Jesus said to him, 'Don't tell anyone about this. Instead, go to the priest and let him examine you. Take along the offering required in the law of Moses for those who have been healed of leprosy. This will be a public testimony that you have been cleansed.'" So Jesus has come down from the mountain. People have followed him, and he is confronted with a leper, a man with a skin disease that has caused him to be outcast from his community, outcast from his family, from his work, from his friendships, and his whole life. In this time, leprosy wasn't just something you lived with and kept going day to day. You were cast out from your community. He bows, almost as if he is worshipping Jesus. The word for kneel is also translated to worship. So he bows in a way that is worshipping Jesus. And he calls him Lord. Now, not the kind of Lord that is like a sir or a master, but a Lord who carries an authority. This leper understands Jesus' authority. He seems to understand who he's speaking to. It's not just some guy. It is someone with an authority in which is worthy of bowing down and asking for something quite impressive. He says, if you are willing, can you heal me and make me clean? When I was in year 12, I went to school parties, and I didn't drink. It wasn't because I was being moral or anything like that. It wasn't because I was trying to be righteous, but it was because I wasn't 18. And Mum and Dad were pretty down the line on that. If it's illegal to drink before you're 18, then you won't drink before you're 18. So I would go to these parties, and the thing with teenagers and drinking, I'm not sure if anyone's experienced and if they can cast their minds back to it. It can be quite funny. There's some moments where people can do some funny things, but it can also be completely wild and dangerous and just not safe and not ideal. There's a reason why 16 to 17 year olds shouldn't be drinking. But I would be put into this situation because I wouldn't be drinking. They would be. Someone has to look after them. And we'd get to the end of the night, and some of my friends would be messy. They'd have vomit all over their shirts. They'd be struggling to walk. And someone has to help them. Someone has to help them get to their car or to their parents or to a bed or something like that. And because I was the sober one, that became my job. Now, in this situation, the only way to help that person is to risk getting messy. Maybe as I'm carrying them, they continue to vomit and my shoes or my shirt takes a hit. Maybe they lean on me with their dirty shirt. Maybe they pass out and then I'm trying to carry them. It becomes difficult. So I have to be prepared to get messy in that sense. But more than that, there's other things to deal with. What if people see me carrying this person and assume I'm in the same state as them? What if people see me helping out this person and think, oh, look, there's just two 17-year-olds who are not doing so well. That's a really bad look. There's this contention of a messiness in a physical sense, but there's also this idea of messiness in that this could hurt relationships. This could make some conversations difficult. And was I prepared to do that? I'm sure you can think of a situation, maybe with a family, a member or a friend, and you've been maybe put in this predicament. Maybe it wasn't with alcohol, maybe it was something else, maybe it was with some money or some choices or things like that where you had to potentially get a bit messy. I'm sure you can think of times that you've helped. I'm also sure you can think of times that you maybe didn't help because it was going to be too messy. For most people in this situation, with this leper, this was a time that you wouldn't help. It's important to understand that. He has been cast off from the community because he is unclean. He would not be someone who you would go and touch. Leper with the skin disease in this situation, you would pretty much say, sorry, friend, but you've been outcast and there's a reason for that. And we know what Jesus does because he's Jesus. Jesus responds by saying, I'm willing, and he touches the man with the skin disease. And he says, be healed, and the man is healed. He doesn't care about the consequences in this moment. He is not concerned about them because helping this man is of more importance. Loving this man is of more importance. And revealing his authority in this moment is of more importance. So Leviticus 5 verses 1 to 6 give us a little bit of an idea of what is not meant to happen in these situations. It gives the Jewish people some rules to follow about uncleanliness. And one of the things they are told not to do is to touch human uncleanliness. And if they do, they are to present an offering to the priest and atone for that. Jesus touches this man. So what do we do with that? Is Jesus allowed to break the rules and do whatever he wants? Is he allowed to break the laws? No. I like it. He isn't. But we know that Jesus is the law. In Matthew 5, the sermon that he has just preached, he says, do not think I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have come not to abolish them, but to fulfill them. We see Jesus break the rules again in Matthew 12 as he works on the Sabbath. And we see Jesus break the rules in Matthew 15 as he deals with an unclean ceremonial washing. He doesn't clean his hands with his disciples before they have dinner. So what do we do with this? These moments are to show that these rules are not what confines humanity now. As the kingdom of heaven is ushered in, we are called to the fulfillment of those laws in Jesus. So to break that down a little bit more, if Jesus touched this man and said, be healed, and nothing happened, if he reached out and touched him and said, be healed, and the man was not healed, well, it would have taught that everything Jesus had just done was mute and pointless. He wasn't anything. He's a guy who can spin a good yarn on a hill, and that's it. Just another guy talking good things. And people would have left at that moment. And Jesus would have had to have dealt with the fact that he just touched someone unclean, and he would have had to have dealt with those ceremonial moments. But because this man is immediately healed, it gives testimony to who Jesus is. And it gives him an authority like no other. And I wonder what it would have been like in that moment. If they understood what Jesus meant when he said, I'd come to fulfill the law, not to abolish it. Because if it was true, how would this be the fulfillment of the law? An interesting tension that these followers would have had to have dealt with. It's not as much of a tension for us because we know what the ultimate fulfillment of the law looks like. We know who was the one who came to atone for our sins, the one who took our sin and I guess became the ultimate sacrifice through the death and resurrection. And this next part can be a little bit confusing because we're saying that Jesus has, I guess, fulfilled the law here. And in the following statement, he asks this man to follow the law of Moses. So he himself has fulfilled the law, and now he's asking the man to go and do the law. Does that make sense? Leviticus 14 gives clear instruction about what to do in this situation. It says, take an offering to the priest. He will see if you're clean. And then if you are, and you take up that, do that offering, you can go be a part of society again. You are clean and you are back to being normal. So why is that law worth following, but not touching a leper? And I think this has to do with Jesus asking the man not to tell anyone. And when he says not to tell anyone, I don't think he means the people who just watched. I think he means the religious leaders who might not be ready for this. Because again, Jesus is using the law as a testimony. He tells the leper, go straight to the priest, show him you are clean, and this will give public testimony, a testimony to the work of God. If Jesus simply told everyone what he had just done, those who were not ready to hear, they wouldn't have seen Jesus as a messianic figure. They wouldn't have seen him as a Messiah. They wouldn't have seen him as a great guy who has come to do everything that he was called to do in his ministry. They would have seen him as a crazy guy. They would have seen him as an evil spirit. And this healing would not have been attributed to God. They were not ready. So Jesus reveals his authority in a different way. See, he reveals his authority to those who are watching and understand who he is by touching a leper and healing him. They've been taught something and then they see his authority in action. But for those who weren't ready to hear that, those who still relied on that law, he says to them, This is how it's to be done. Fulfill that, and they will attribute that to God. Jesus, his plan for salvation and his promise is ushered in gradually as people are ready to receive it, as people are ready to understand it. And what he says here is the kingdom of heaven is somewhere where the unclean can become clean. as he does this, it would have been an amazing moment. A tough moment for some, no doubt. I wonder if people would have walked off and said, no, this is too much now. But that picture of the Messiah is gradually coming to those who are ready to understand it. He lets them know that the kingdom of heaven is somewhere where the unclean are made clean. Next up is the Roman officer from verses 5. When Jesus returned to Capernaum, a Roman officer came and pleaded with him. Lord, my young servant lies in a bed paralyzed in terrible pain. Jesus said, Will I come heal him? But the officer said, Lord, I'm not worthy to have you come into my home. Just say the word from where you are and my servant will be healed. I know this because I am under the authority of my superior officers and I have authority over my soldiers. I need only to say go and they go or come and they come. And if I say to my slaves, do this, they do it. When Jesus heard this, he was amazed, turning to those who were following him and said, I tell you the truth. I haven't seen faith like this in all Israel. And I tell you this, that many Gentiles will come from all over the world, from east and west, and sit down with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob at the feast in the kingdom of heaven. But many Israelites, those for whom the kingdom was prepared, will be thrown into outer darkness, and there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Then Jesus said to the Roman officer, go back home, because you believed it, it has happened. And the servant was healed that same hour. So imagine how this Roman officer is feeling. A servant is not well, and he must have cared for this servant. Life back in the first century wasn't necessarily worth all that much. People were slaves. People were treated poorly. The lower class certainly didn't have a huge life expectancy, and death was a big part of just the way it was. So this officer, to care enough for his servant that he would seek out Jesus, it should show the importance of this relationship. It's not just some person. It's a servant that he really cares for. Now, who is this soldier? Well, I can tell you who he wasn't. He wasn't Jewish. Roman officers were not Jewish. So what does that mean? It means that we are dealing with someone who would have been seen as an outcast because of his race. He was not one of God's chosen people. He was not Jewish. It means we are dealing with someone who would have been seen in that community as different. The leper was an outcast from society because of his sickness. This man was an outcast of society because he was a Gentile. But he is prepared to break that racial barrier for the sake of his servant. Again, Jesus is referred to as Lord here, and in the same way, as if he understands the authority. Who is this, capital L, Lord? And then the back and forth between Jesus and the officer here is really quite interesting and really quite cool. Because it shows that this officer had such an understanding of the power and authority of Jesus. How could he call him anything else other than Lord? He asks Jesus if he can heal his servant who is sick. And when Jesus suggests that perhaps he should come to his house and heal him, the officer gives a different solution. He says, you don't have to come to my house to heal my servant. You can do it here. He goes on to share this kind of analogy that he is an officer. And because he is an officer, he has a certain amount of authority over people. And he can make them do things without having to go and see them. Now, we know what that's like. We can make things happen from the comfort of our bed via a simple text message. We can make things at work happen on the other side of Australia through an email. So this story, we can understand what this Roman officer is kind of comparing to, but on such a greater level. Surely, if the man is claiming to be the Son of God, then that kind of authority should be 100 times more. Surely he could simply call out to be healed from here and it could happen. It's a weird feeling, that kind of authority that we get, to know that we can do those things, to imagine that so much more. But it's a profound truth. Jesus has this authority over everything. Jesus then turns to those who are still following him. And I wonder if any have joined at this stage after the healing. I wonder if some people jumped on board and said, hey, what's this guy doing? And then as they're walking to the next place, maybe they sort of shared a condensed version of the Sermon on the Mount to them. And they're like, oh, that guy said that and he did this. I'm going to keep going. And I wonder if anyone jumped off the boat and said, this is a bit too much for me. But he turns to them. And he says, I tell you the truth, or truly I say to you. Jesus says this 31 times throughout this book, and he says it in a similar way to a prophet would say, thus says the Lord. So this is pretty legitimate. You can take this to the bank sort of stuff. And he essentially says there is no barrier or qualifier that you might think of for who can enter the kingdom of heaven. It appears entrance is open to anyone. Those who thought maybe they were not welcome are welcome, and those who assumed that they were going to be there, perhaps they're not. And then he says, go home, you have believed your servant to be healed. And he is. Now, that idea that the kingdom of heaven is for everyone, that might not seem weird to us. Again, we've come here this morning from all different backgrounds. But in this moment, that would have been quite profound. It is for the Jew and the Gentile. Jesus sets things in motion here by helping out a Gentile Roman officer. Now, while the healing might be the central part of this passage, again, it shows that Jesus has the authority to heal, but it also shows Jesus has the ultimate authority. If we just look at this healing story, we miss the following bit of what he then does for everybody, the healing he then offers everyone. His healing proves his testimony to the thing that he will follow up by saying. The one who can heal the leper, the one that can heal the servant without being anywhere near, he has also said that the Gentiles will feast at the kingdom of heaven and that Jews will feast too. Race, background, history, position, none of that is a qualifier or a disqualifier. It is your faith that is now the qualifier. Through the healing of the servant, we get a picture of the kingdom of heaven. The kingdom of heaven is welcome to all who profess faith in the King. Now, finally, we get to Peter's mother-in-law. When Jesus arrived at Peter's house, Peter's mother-in-law was sick in bed with a high fever. But when Jesus touched her hand, the fever left her. She got up and prepared a meal for him. That evening, many demon-possessed people were brought to Jesus. He cast out the evil spirits with a simple command and he healed the sick. This fulfilled the word of the Lord through the prophet Isaiah, who said, he took our sicknesses and removed our diseases. So what to make of this? Here we have Jesus entering Peter's house and he takes care of his mother-in-law. She is sick. Jesus says nothing. He touches her and that sickness is gone. A third way that Jesus shows his authority. First, he speaks and there is healing. Second, he is not even in the vicinity of the ill person and there is healing. And third, he touches without a word and there is healing. This passage I thought was going to be the easiest part of the message, but it sort of confuses me the most because it's the simplest part. The previous stories are both two fairly epic stories of healing. One, a man who is full of sickness, full of leprosy, is healed with a touch. The other, we don't even see the person in sight and they are healed. And here we have Peter's mother-in-law in bed with a high fever. Now, a high fever in comparison to leprosy and paralysis in bed is far, far further down the list. And I think that's really, really cool, because it shows that Jesus cares for those moments as well. It's not just the leper who is outcast and full of sickness. It's not just the person paralyzed in bed a distance away. It is also the person who is a little bit unwell with a fever. He's there for them as well. And this then brings people to his door. It says, after she got up and prepared a meal for him, that many demon-possessed people were brought to Jesus. He cast out evil spirits with a simple command, and he healed the sick. We don't get big stories about these people. We don't find out what those problems were. We don't find out how large or how small they were, but we see he did it. He didn't limit himself to three. Again, the idea of this passage isn't necessarily how many people Jesus healed or how many people Jesus could heal. The fact is, the healing was to point to his authority as the coming Messiah. Matthew's primary goal in this passage is that these healing miracles display the mission and authority of Jesus. And he uses Isaiah 53:4 to show that Jesus is who he says he is, that he is the Messiah. He took our sicknesses and removed our diseases. Now, for some of us, we might know the full passage of Isaiah 53. And it does deal with spiritual deliverance of diseases and pains. We are also aware of the role that is displayed and played by Jesus in this passage, that he is the one that is to take on the redemptive suffering. But Matthew still notes here that this healing ministry of Jesus points towards the fulfillment of God's mission. So what do we do with this? What do we do with these 17 verses? This is what I'd like to suggest. Jesus performed miracles to point towards the Father. Jesus performed miracles to show his authority. Jesus performed miracles to say, this is what I've taught and this is what I've said. I am the only one who can back it up. Put your faith in me. He made people aware. He makes them aware of the kingdom of heaven. He gives glimpses of heaven on earth in those moments. In these moments where people got healed, there was a glimpse of perfection, of what it'll look like when sickness is gone, of what it'll look like when disease is removed. And these people had to do something with that. Would they ask more? Would they become curious? Would they continue to follow? Or would they leave at that point and say, this is all too much? So, for us today, what do we do? How do we give people a glimpse of the kingdom of heaven? Are we giving people something to be interested in? Are we giving people something curious to follow? Or are we waiting on something tangibly miraculous to happen so we can point to it and then say, look, there's God? Or are we waiting for people to come and ask us about God, even though we've never expressed that we believe he is king of everything in our lives? Or perhaps we're telling people exactly what they should do and then not living that. In all three of those situations, we see a perfect Jesus. We have read 17 verses of the greatest story. And I hope that you have a desire to tell people about it. I hope you have a desire to read it with people. I hope you have a desire to give a Bible to someone and say, read this, it's wonderful. I also hope you have a desire to look at your own life and say, if I'm going to share this, how is it matching up? I believe the church's role on earth is to be the visible representation of the kingdom. When followers of Jesus gather together, we should look different, and people should ask why. When people walk in here and they see us singing songs, they should be like, why are they singing songs? What's all that about? Why are they praying? What's this communion? What does that mean? Why are they learning from a book? And why are they trying to put that into action? We have an opportunity to show people the kingdom in the way we live and the way we act. So how does our week look differently because of that? If you saw every opportunity as a chance to be a glimpse of the kingdom of heaven to someone, not necessarily through miraculous moments of healing, but through simple acts of faith. I wonder what it is for you this week. We could discuss right now, but I'd much rather chat about it over a coffee or a water. And I really would. And I think we should really want to talk about it as well. As we gather, we should really want to say, what is it that I can do that can give people a glimpse of the kingdom? Because I don't think we get to say, I'm too young or I'm too old or I'm too experienced or too inexperienced or too busy or not busy enough. I don't think we get to opt in and out of this. If we are followers of Jesus, if we have faith in him, if we believe that he is the authority, I believe we are meant to be the picture of Jesus on earth. And that isn't conditional to anything except the faith that we profess in him and being on earth. So I really hope that after this service, after we close off with a song, that we will sing that song with gusto, but we will go out and we'll talk about it. What does this look like for me? Let's pray. Father God, thank you for your son. Thank you for his ministry, and thank you for your word. As we are challenged by it, may your spirit make it clear to us what we are to do. May we not be working alone, but in partnership with you. You are in control, and may we be listening to you, allowing us to be guided. I pray that as we are the visible representation of the kingdom of heaven, that we will do that well, that we will draw people to you and you will do a work in them. Thank you that we could gather this morning. We thank you that we could have a great time worshiping you. Amen.